I call the House Education Policy Committee to order. There is a quorum present. Representative Roach, have you had an opportunity to review the minutes from Tuesday, March 10th? And would you like to make a motion?
Yes, I have. I'd like to make a motion to pass the minutes, approve the minutes.
Great. Representative Roach moves to approve the minutes from Tuesday, March 10th. Discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Actually, I have a correction. They're the minutes from March 17th. So they're the minutes from March 17th is what we're about to vote on. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The minutes from March 17th are approved. Okay, hi, everyone. We have a lot of business to get through and a lot of important testimony. I just want to set some, you know, just set some ground rules here. Testimony is limited to 2 minutes. There will be a timer set by the clerk, and I will cut you off. I am sorry. Please do not take it personally. We just have to make sure everyone has their voice heard. Also, just as a reminder, that outbursts, clapping, signage is not permitted in our hearing room. So thanks for hanging with us, everyone. Let's get going. Our first bill for consideration today is House File 3714. Members, it's our intention to hear this bill and then refer it to the Education Finance Committee. Representative Cardi, welcome to the committee. And while you're getting settled, I will make the motion to move House File 3714 before the committee to be re-referred to the Education Finance Committee. And I also understand you have an A3 author's amendment, which I will make the motion to move for you. Can you speak to your A3 amendment, Representative Clark? Ready.
Yes. First of all, thank you, chairs and members, for seeing this bill. The A3 amendment, and I might get some technical assistance from researchers, but basically it's making some changes to, first of all, acknowledge that it doesn't negatively interact or doesn't interact with I'm going to go straight to research, but that it doesn't interact with the ICWA piece. Also, there's been changes that the community ed is able to get a 5-day business turnaround versus a 48 business turnaround. And I think in here, I'm gonna actually go straight to research because there was supposed to be, as my understanding, I had an A3 and an A2 that were merged and the whole financial piece was supposed to be taken out. So can I go to research to help me go through that?
Ms. Parra, can you help explain the A3 amendment?
Chair Jordan and members, yes. A lot of the changes you see here, you notice there's references to the Minnesota Indian Family Preservation Act. So that's the kind of state version of ICWA. So that's the change that Representative Clardy was referring to. There are 2 sections are being deleted, sections 2 and 3. That first one of those, section 2, is relates to community ed, which is under the jurisdiction of this committee. And that's so it's deleting a section that would have required a district to do an annual report. And then the section that's being deleted is 142A. Section 3 of the bill. Oh, yes, that's the child care allowance portion of the assessment. So those are 2 sections that are being deleted. And then that change from 48 hours to 5 business days in a couple spots. Otherwise, the rest of it is adding references to the Minnesota Indian Family Preservation Act.
Any questions to the A3 amendment? Seeing none, we'll move to adopt. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, say nay. The A3 amendment is adopted. To your bill as amended, Representative Cardi.
Thank you, Chair and members. The purpose of this bill is I ran into this person about 2 years ago, and she was telling me about some of the complications that families, foster families, have as far as making sure that their kids are safe at home and being in line with the state laws about leaving kids home for certain periods of time and certain ages and that type of thing. And then also she was talking about some of the transparency issues within the foster care system. So that's what this bill is here to address. So I'm going to actually just turn it over to Zua. Would you like to start?
Yeah,
but you're going to go through the chair.
Welcome to the committee. Again, testimony will be limited to 2 minutes. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is Osa Han, and I'm the executive director of Foster Advocates. This bill has been in progress for years. Long before House File 3714 was drafted, our foster leaders raised concerns about access to school programming. They understood firsthand how these programs are lifelines. The difference between isolation and belonging, instability, and the confidence that carries students through schools to brighter futures. People often say life outcomes hinge on a series of key decisions. This bill removes barriers for families to make one of those first decisions, outcomes-defining decisions, placing fosters in school programming, which cascades into better grades, attendance, education pathways, stability, and thriving futures. While this bill will enhance the lives of fosters, it's important to note that this bill also honors the sacrifices of working-class families, day-to-day constituents who reside in all of your districts, who are stepping up within their means to care for fosters. Throughout this process, we have been working closely with the community education partners and made meaningful changes based on their feedback, such as no longer requesting data collection or disaggregated annual reporting to monitor implementation, and more than doubling the verification timeline. Not because these are not important asks, they very much are, but because we were told they would create more administrative complexity for schools, and that is not our goal here in the slightest. We are deeply appreciative of educators and school districts that create daily environments for safety and stability, an anchor in the whirlwind of what out-of-home placement is, oftentimes across multiple schools in a short period. So we remove those items. Still, we know there is a major problem here. Fosters face deeper barriers than many peers, including lower on-time graduation rates than even homeless students, a gap clearly shown in the Minnesota Department of Education's publicly available data. That is why we're seeking highest priority here, not because homeless youth are less deserving, but because they currently have better outcomes. So we must target our efforts where they are most needed. For young people in state care, opportunities are often lost, not because of intent, but because there are limits of general priority, which often depends on interpretation and results of inconsistent application statewide. Highest priority ensures meaningful implementation, not just hope and discretion. Highest priority also makes these commitments tangible for those who need it most based on the data. This bill also eases permanency and prevents extra placements for young people who simply through prioritization of fosters and programming will be able to stabilize sooner. Fosters asked for this prioritization in the Minnesota Promise Report. House File 3714 supports their vision of fairness, belonging, and opportunity. I urge you all to meet our state's promise to fosters and to these families who are trying their best, again, within their means, to provide stable homes for our state's young people. Thank you, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Director. And members of the audience, if we could just keep it quiet so we can hear the testifiers, that would be much appreciated. Thank you, Director, for your testimony. Next on my list is Zua Vu. Please correct my pronunciation if needed and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good afternoon, co-chairs and members, and thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Zua Vu, and I'm here to share my story and support for HF 3714. I worked as a teacher for 15 years, during which I encountered many fosters, and their stories inspired me to learn more about how I could foster. I became licensed in 2021, and a few months later, a group of three siblings, ages 5, 6, and 7, came to live with me. I knew early on reunification was unlikely. As a single woman working for full time, I was not prepared for the amount of work I was about to encounter. When the 22-23 school year started, I enrolled my now adopted children in their schools before and after school care program, they were put on a waiting list because their current policy is that students are accepted on a first-come, first-serve basis. I then asked if there was a priority for kids in foster care. They said no. After several phone calls to the school and the county worker, I was told just days before school started that they would be accepted. The next year, we had to do it all over again, and I was overwhelmed. I told the county worker I could not continue to foster if we could not get them into a program. After hours of calling, emailing, my kids were finally admitted. The amount of stress this created was very frustrating. I want to give you an idea of the cost. In those 2 years, before and after school care cost me over $26,000. Not once during my training did anyone mention how much child care would cost, or that I would only receive a monthly stipend of $600 for 3 children. Is this the best way to support children and families in foster care, children that are in the care of the state? I was my kids' 5th placement. How could I look them in the eye and give them up because school programming was too expensive? To me, this meant giving up their friends, their school, and the structured routine that we worked so hard on. This bill is about stability for foster children and providing prospective foster families with the transparency necessary to make informed decisions for their family. Members, thank you for your time, and please support HF 3714.
Thank you for your testimony. Next on my list is Deborah Jackson. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Jackson. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is Ayana Lee. I'm a legislative assistant at Foster Advocates, and I will be reading this testimony on the behalf of Deborah Jackson. My name is Deborah Jackson, and I am speaking in support of HF 3714. I became a foster parent at the age of 25 when I took my niece in. I did not have kids of my own. My decision to step up for my niece comes from my own childhood. When I was younger, there were times when my mom was unable to care for me, and it was my older sister who stepped in to help raise me. Because of her, I was able to stay with family and avoid entering the foster system. At 25, my life looked different from very different from most people my age. I could have been traveling, building my career, or focusing on myself. Instead, I stepped up to become the parent my niece needed. It wasn't an easy decision. There were many moments of self-doubt and many nights filled with fear. I often questioned whether I was strong enough or prepared enough to raise a child on my own. But what kept me going was knowing that my niece needed me. She needed stability, love, and someone who would fight for her future. The system helped me finalize the adoption, and for that I am very grateful. But what the system did not prepare me for was the financial reality of raising a child on a single income. After school programming and childcare were not luxuries, they were necessities. Without prioritizing these services, families like mine are left struggling to figure out how to make everything work. The costs added up quickly, and many foster parents are forced to make impossible choices between their jobs and their child's care. Foster and kinship parents are providing stability, keeping children out of the system, but too often we are doing it without the resource that would make it substitutable. My niece loves sports, but we had to give them up because we couldn't afford the cost. If we truly want children to grow up in families instead of a group home or with strangers, then we must support the families who step up when those children needed them the most. Please support HF 3714 as it will benefit all fosters. Thank you.
Thank you for reading this letter. With no more testifiers, we will now move to member discussion. Representative DePell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to ask a quick question, likely of both the Chair and of Representative Clardy. Would the federal tax credit that is potential for Minnesota, if either the governor or the legislature approves that and just conforms to it, would that help with these programs?
Representative Pell, the bill is going to Education Finance, and they would be better positioned to answer those questions in Education Finance. Representative DePell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe that policy oftentimes is driven by finance, and I didn't see a fiscal note on this either. And so since this committee has oversight over policy, which has costs associated with it, I think it's important to understand the financial side, not necessarily directing specifically to education finance, but the impact that the policy has on the financial structure of the state. And I most certainly want to support foster children as much as possible, and I commend the families who are foster families. We should support that without question. But I do believe that it's important to understand, as I read through a lot of the information attached here and associated, that some individuals were stating that there are limited funds or that these programs have been limited and that they wished that it could be broadened. And so it's to that end that I'm asking a question. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Cardi.
This bill deals with after-school care and before-school care. The bill that you're referencing, in my opinion, primarily deals with private schools and vouchers. And so this is not regarding vouchers. And so I'd like to keep the focus on the after-school care bill for in prioritizing students getting into that. So, but I would love to take this offline and have a deeper conversation with you.
Representative DePell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This will be the last question and comment. The bill that I'm referencing would actually fund public schools as well. And about 90% of students in Minnesota go to public schools. And the policy that we're talking about right now would be directly impacted by those funds. It would potentially add $250 to $300 million to the bottom line of education for public schools in Minnesota. That would far outweigh the minuscule 10% of non-public schools. And so I would just ask this committee to consider strongly approving that, because the connection to our public school system is fundamental, and the monetary resources that could be accessed just like that would be there for 90% of the students in this state.
Representative Green.
Thank you.
There is no fiscal note on here. Can you just talk to that a little bit? Why is there no fiscal note on here?
Sure. Absolutely. And then I also have that. I'm sorry, Chair Jordan.
Yes, I'm sorry. Representative Clardy. And again, yes. Fiscal notes really get discussed in fiscal committees, which we are not one. So go ahead, Representative Clardy.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Jordan and Representative Green. So it's my understanding that something has been requested. It's also my understanding, because of an amendment that was made, that we asked for all fiscal pieces to be removed. And at this point, the discussion is going on with community education on the priority list. So parts of the fiscal piece where they were specifically asking for reporting, that's been removed. The other part is interaction with the North Star, that's been removed. So the bill that I'm hoping to go forward, because we're still in the process of cleaning and getting it great, will not or should not have fiscal impact, but we did request a fiscal note.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Chair Jordan, and thank you. And I do think this, yeah, I agree that the conversation about fiscal should be held in education finance, which both of us serve on. I also think that one of the reasons that is important that we have those conversations is funding sources. And you cannot just translate money that goes to a nonprofit into salaries, which I know is to be true. So you can't just take money and plop it into community ed and after-school services, so in the public school system. So that's why that's important to have those conversations there. So I thank you for bringing the bill forward.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Chair. I have just a couple questions, because I am also a licensed ICWA mom, and this matters, and there are a bunch of decisions that are made when you make the choice to be a licensed foster care mom. And when you make the choice to do that, you know, some of it is just knowing your community and where things are at. And so I guess I just have some clarifying questions. So is this bill assuming that a child who is in foster care comes to their placement at the beginning of a school year, and therefore at the beginning of a school year, they would have priority into this after-school program? That's my first question, then I have a follow-up.
Representative Cardi, Executive Director.
Through the chair, Representative Keeler, the change here would be for not just at the beginning of the school year, but also if there's a disruption during the school year. That's why we also made that change to the verification timeline from 24 hours to 5 days. So it's not just at the beginning of the school year, disruptions happen throughout the year, so that there's also that time for that immediate addition to before and after school programming if necessary.
Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, thanks for clarifying that. So what you're saying is that, and I get it, because children get placed with you. I mean, it can be any day of the year. I mean, I get that. And it's a quick decision that's made. And so I guess this bill is operating under the assumption that our after-school programs are not full year-round. Yep. Is that right?
Through the Chair, Representative Keeler, correct.
Go ahead, Representative Keeler.
Thank you. From my experience, and I don't know about other people's districts, but most of our after-school programs are full. And so what happens, I mean, we have a lot of after-school programs, that it's a thing that, like, I'm sure all of us in our communities, they're full. And so this is where I think the financial conversation comes in, which I do think that this should be a conversation that's had at the education finance table, because if you're asking for after-school programs to hold spots for a priority, then that costs money. If you're assuming that after-school programs aren't full year-round, I'm not sure that that's a fair assumption. And so I guess how, if I take a child who's in first grade who needs after-school care and all of my after-school programs are full, how would that impact that child?
Executive Director, I'm sorry, is your last name Akpadatanias? Can you?
Indeed, and you pronounce that very well. Thank you. Again, through the chair, Representative Keeler, we are not holding spots. That is something that we were discussing at one point, but that is not fiscally possible, as you've noted. So as soon as there is an available spot, our request is that prioritization is given to fosters. We are not asking for there to be held spots at this time. In the future, that would be a wonderful addition, but right now we're just asking for prioritization of available spots.
Representative Keeler.
Thanks for clarity.
Further discussions? Otherwise, I will go to Chair Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Clardy. Our foster kids are very important foster families, and they're amongst our most vulnerable children, and it's difficult to find foster parents, so anything we can do, I believe, to help support them is a good thing, and I think this will. And I'm glad to hear that we're not bumping out students who are already in the program, but if there is availability, then prioritizing is likely a good thing and will help the foster families a lot. And I will look forward to discussion in Ed Finance, which is not for here, the financial part, but I do think we should explore in Ed Finance that tax credit, because it could possibly help. It's for school enrichment for public school students as well. So it could help open up spots in those areas where we don't have enough spots, so we can get more of these foster kids into the program. That's for another day. But thank you for the bill. I think prioritizing our foster kids, most vulnerable kids, is important. So thank you.
Representative Cardi, closing remarks.
First of all, thank you so much for hearing this conversation. And Representative Keeler, your comments were very valid. I just want to assure you that there's conversations going on right now with community education on this and how it would work, because I would agree with you that the school district I most recently retired from didn't have a lot of open spots. It was like filled. So the essence of the bill is not to tell people how to do it, but to figure out collectively how we can take care of this population, because I know that you have been working with them. And we just need to know, or just remember, that these kids and these, well, the kids, right, are all of ours until they go to a family, and then they're the foster families, right? And then, but they also don't have the decision, like final decisions, in a lot of the legal aspects that still goes back to the other families. So our job right now is to make sure that these families are able to make sure kids have a safe place to be after school, and that they can follow state law by accommodating them that way. So thanks so much for hearing this bill.
Thank you, Representative Cardi. I will renew my motion to refer House File 3714 as amended to the Education Finance Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. The motion prevails, and the bill is now on its way. Thank you, Representative Cardi. Our next bill up for consideration is House File 3399. Members, it's our intention to hear this. Excuse me, 4399. Members, it's our intention to hear House File 4399 and send it to the General Register. Representative Liebling, welcome to the Education Policy Committee. While you're getting settled, I will make the motion to move House File 4399 before us and re-refer the bill to the General Register. And I also understand you have an author's amendment. I will move the A2 amendment for you as well. Can you please explain the A2 amendment, Chair Liebling?
All right. Well, thank you very much. First of all, thank you so much, Chair Jordan, for hearing the bill and for your assistance. So this is a little bit legislatively complicated because, and probably Ms. Parra could explain it a little better, but the bottom line here is that the Rochester School District has been operating under a special law, and we've had school district elections where people run in a, everyone runs district-wide, but you have to pick a seat, so it's called the lane system, and it's unique, or maybe one other district in the state does this. And it has resulted in some kind of strange results. It's very hard for voters to understand what's going on because you could have a lot of candidates in one seat and then one in another seat, all running to represent the same area. So this bill before you changes that, and the amendment is in order to make sure that the district retains the ability to later on change its organization if it wishes to do what many other districts in the state do, which is have some districts. So right now everyone is still going to run district-wide. That's the intention. But like, for example, I think Minneapolis has districts and some at-large seats. And so that's a more common way to do it, at least for the bigger districts. So this retains for them the flexibility to do that. That's my understanding. And Ms. Parra, maybe if I'm not explaining that correctly, maybe a little help would be great.
Ms. Parra, anything to add?
Chair Jordan, Representative Liebling, yes. So the amendment refers to Section 205A12. That statute allows districts to alter to be an under-election district, but it doesn't apply to districts in the cities of the first class, which would apply to Rochester. So what the amendment does is it says Rochester can use the process that is available to other districts, even though the statute says it doesn't apply.
Thank you.
Any discussion to the A2 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Chair Liebling, anything to add, or would you like me to move to your testifier?
I think we could go to my testifier, who's the chair of our Rochester School Board, Kathy Nathan.
Great. Welcome to the committee, Chair Nathan. Please state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Chair Jordan, Chair Bennett, members of the committee, my name is Kathy Nathan. I serve as chair of the Rochester Public Schools Board of Education. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today, and a special thank you to the bill's authors for bringing this forward on our district's behalf. I'm here to strongly urge your support for House File 4399, which repeals the effect of a 1974 special law that forces Rochester Public Schools to use an antiquated alley system for our at-large elections. The system requires that each of our at-large seats be treated as a distinct parallel contest. Even though all board members represent the exact same constituents and hold identical responsibilities, candidates are forced to file for a specific numbered seat. It is highly confusing. As any member of Rochester Board will tell you, during campaigns, candidates find themselves constantly explaining the mechanics of this bizarre election system, often at the expense of discussing substantive educational issues. Worse, this system distorts the will of the electorate. Voters are frequently forced to arbitrarily choose between two preferred candidates who happen to file for the same seat, while for another seat, are forced to select from a pool of candidates they prefer less, or even an unchallenged candidate. The bill corrects these issues by ensuring that our at-large elections are simply governed by Minnesota standard election law. On March 3rd, Rochester School Board unanimously passed a resolution calling for this precise change. Before voting, we deliberately tabled the matter at a previous meeting to invite public feedback. Despite multiple stories in the local news, not a single person has come forward to defend the current system. The change called for by this bill will better serve our voters. It aligns Rochester with a standard election framework used statewide. It reduces ballot confusion. It costs the state and the district absolutely nothing, and it is completely nonpartisan. We respectfully ask that you support this bill, and we thank you for all your time and effort on behalf of the people of Minnesota.
Thank you, Board Chair Nathan. Members, any discussion to the bill? Representative Lawrence.
Yeah, Madam Chair, thank you very much. And just a clarification, the last part of this says the effective date is based on upon the school board's approval. So the school board is still the final decider in whether to move, change your election process, correct?
Chair.
We're just allowing the option for them. Sorry, Madam Chair.
School board member Nathan, would you like to answer that?
Well, the board could not take this action unless the legislature passes this law. So we can't do it independent of your work. But yes, there is one additional step, and that is, as we would do for every election, we would pass a resolution notifying of the upcoming election, and then this structure would be included in.
Representative Green.
Thank you so much, Chair. I don't have a question. I just wanted to thank you for your service as chair of a school board. School board members across our state are really doing the heart of the work for students, and I just really appreciate it. And this bill, I think, opens the doors up for more people to run and to be able to see themselves in these positions, which we need more of. So I applaud you for bringing this forward. So thank you to your board.
Representative Gottfried.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for the public record, I just wanted to make sure we clarified why this is being seen in end policy and not elections.
It's being seen in elections.
Oh, is it
well.
Being seen in elections
it's
as well?
It's already been heard in elections.
Oh, never mind. I apologize, and I retract my statement. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Gottfried. Any other discussion? Otherwise, I will go to Chair Bennett.
Thank you. I don't know. Can we ever pull back our words, Representative Gottfried? I'm not sure. Anyway, Representative Liebling, I think this makes total sense. I do have a quick question. Does the school board currently support this?
Yes, we passed a unanimous resolution to ask the legislature to make this change.
Thank you. Sounds like a good idea to me. Thank you.
Great. Chair Liebling, any closing remarks?
Yeah, thank you so much. And I really appreciate that Chair Nathan is here today with this. And this did come from the school board. I just want to say, you know, for the public, I personally would prefer a system where we do run in districts, at least partly. But this, what you have before you, is the choice of the school board. And I respect that. And maybe at some time in the future, they will, you know, we'll see how this goes. And maybe there will be a different choice, but this is, I really want to express my gratitude to Chair Jordan, to Chair Quam, who's also, as you know, from the Rochester area, and he is the co-chair of the Elections Committee, and everyone has, and especially Ms. Para, who jumped right in and drafted this really quickly because we, you know, with deadlines and everything, so I just, this is really an example of the best of us working together because it is very bipartisan. It has moved very quickly and just appreciate everyone's work and willingness to get this going.
Yes, thank you, Chair Wayblaine. When you told me about this, I was like, oh, people of Rochester cannot live this way. And with that, I will renew my motion to re-refer House File 4399 as amended to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. The motion prevails, and the bill is on the General Register. Thank you for joining us, Chair Wayblaine.
Thank you.
Our next bill up for the next bill up for consideration is House File 4176. Members, it is our intention to hear this bill and lay it over for further consideration. Chair Joachim, welcome to the committee. And while you are getting settled, I will move House File 4176 before us. And I also understand you have an author's amendment to get the bill in the shape you would prefer. So I will also go ahead and move the A1 amendment for you. So to your amendment, Chair Joachim.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for having us here today. A1 just clarifies some of the language and makes sure that we have a member of the union of that district as part of the site-based, and then just cleans up some other stuff.
Any discussion to the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, say nay. The A1 amendment is adopted. To your bill as amended, Chair Joachim.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Jordan and Chair Bennett and committee members. Thank you for having a hearing on House File 4176 that contains updates to site-governed school statutes. The site-governed school law is already in statute. It's 123B.045, but no school or district is currently using a site-governed arrangement. The intent is that they're in the statute, but the law needs refining so that the districts feel comfortable in implementing a site-based framework. Site-governed schools offer an optional opt-in framework that schools and districts can use that has a few features. It provides a district flexibility. Site-governed schools empower site-level educators, families, and community members to work together to design a model that may better fit their students' needs. The law has accountability measures. The language before you pair flexibility and innovation with clear performance expectations and real accountability for results. And the changes also provide stability when a school adopts a site-governed model. Schools enjoy freedom to innovate for their students while preserving the benefits and support that a district can provide, including the ability to continue if the administration changes. Why this bill is needed, as I said before, currently this statute is confusing, which can discourage interested school districts from utilizing it. So the changes you see in House File 4176 streamline the process while maintaining flexibility, has fewer steps and clearer instructions for entering into a site-governed agreement, clarifies what should be in an agreement, including performance expectations and an important dispute resolution process. And school districts won't have to start from scratch. It respects union status. Teachers may elect to remain at a newly site-governed school or retain access to the district's transfer process. And members, more importantly, I have two people here today that have been working on this issue and that have experience with doing innovative things in their schools. We have Executive Director Lars Erstahl from Education Evolving that will further explain why the language and changes in the bill are needed. And I'm excited to have Dr. George Nolan here from Hopkins Public Schools. He's the principal at Gatewood Elementary to talk about an innovative program they've started and how this language will provide the stability they need to continue.
Thank you, Chair Joachim. We'll go to that testimony now. First on my list is Executive Director Lars Erstahl. Please state your name for the committee and proceed with your testimony.
My name is this on? Can you hear
it
me?
It is on.
My name is Lars Erstahl, Executive Director of Education Evolving. Thanks for having us here today, co-chairs, members of the committee. I had more to say, but Representative Joachim did a fantastic job in her summary of the bill, so I will try and keep it short and sweet. As Representative Joachim shared, this bill is really, it's optional, it's opt-in. It doesn't require anything of anybody. And it provides space and flexibility and a real pathway to trust and empowerment of educators and community leaders. And in exchange, it pairs that flexibility with responsibility for results. And, you know, this is a law that has been on the books in Minnesota for about 20 years. We're not asking to create a new law today. We're asking to clean up an existing law and so that it would actually be useful and actually be used. I kind of think of it like the current law, like handing someone a box of IKEA furniture and there's no instructions. The pieces are there. The final product, if you could get it together, would be great, but there's not really any, you don't have any idea how to kind of fit the parts together. So this is really a cleanup and clarify bill that does that. And I want to also stress that this is not an idea that's new here in Minnesota. This combination of school level flexibility with results is used in states across the country, from New York to Texas to Colorado to North Carolina to Massachusetts. So across a whole lot of different geographies and local contexts. And then I will in a moment turn it to my colleague, Dr. George Nolan, but there is real interest here in Minnesota if we can get this bill right. And we're really excited about turning a good idea into a tool that's usable. And with that, I'll pass it to my colleague.
Thank you for your testimony, Executive Director Esdahl. Next, we will hear testimony from Dr. George Nolan from Gateway Elementary at Hopkins Public Schools. Proceed.
Gatewood. Sorry, just to let you know that.
Gatewood. Thank you.
Good afternoon, co-chairs and committee members. I'm testifying in support of the site governance school bill. I'm Dr. George Nolan, principal of Gatewood Elementary in Hopkins. I've been there for 6 years. We have a wonderful school. Basically, our superintendent, Dr. Mary Perry Reed, is a wonderful superintendent, and she really allows a lot of site-based decision-making and innovation. At Gatewood, we've been able to have the only international baccalaureate outdoor education program in the United States. We feel really great about that. We really thrive on innovation with our outdoor education. During the troubled times of COVID, we had our kids outside, and which was really good for our students. We have a strong MTSS program that really works for the kids to enrich them and provide as much support. We really engage in restorative practices. We also have a wonderful farm care program where we're teaching some of our kids. Now, mind you, at Gatewood, we are about 70% students of color and free and reduced lunch. And our kids are learning how to take care of goats and chickens and also potbelly pigs. So if you ever want to come by Gatewood Elementary to hang out, we will welcome you. And what it does, it really creates empathy for our students and gives them the opportunity to kind of practice those social skills that are needed to show empathy and care for others. In our outdoor education program, we have a naturalist who this past week was tapping trees for maple syrup and cooking that, and kids were really enjoying that. We have hay rides, so it's a wonderful opportunity to be innovative, use our resources, and our teachers were so passionate about outdoor education. They really dug into the research, and because of our instructional framework at Hopkins that allows the site-based decisions, it's been a wonderful opportunity for our students to grow academically, socially, and emotionally.
Thank you for your testimony. Yeah. Now we will move to member discussion, starting with Vice Chair Hill.
Thank you, Chair Jordan, and thank you, Ms. Joachim, for bringing the bill. It's a pleasure to see both Lars and Dr. Nolan today. It's been a long time since our paths have crossed, but I want to speak in favor of the bill. I had the pleasure and the honor of spending about 3 years studying a teacher-powered school located here in St. Paul. And the amount of innovation and student empowerment that took place there was like nothing I'd ever seen in an educational setting. And so the programming that you described, Dr. Nolan, sounds fascinating. Count on a visit from me to come and see the pot-bellied pigs in particular. I think this is a fantastic bill to clean up a bill that previously allowed for this but made it confusing to many who wanted to engage in it. So can't say enough good things about the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion? Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. I just want to ask a question because I'm a little bit confused. And we can take it offline if we need to go a little bit deeper in the weeds about it. But, I love it, and I want to come hang out with the goats for sure. I was just saying that to my team. But, so one of the things, and you'll remember this from when we were talking about attendance task force, one of the buckets was, like, kids should be able to get credit for things that they're doing out in the community. Representative Lawrence and I sat on a task force addressing attendance. And one of the buckets was, like, we had indigenous students from up north come and talk about, like, ricing and how that is, it's an agriculture, like, component along with, obviously, like, a cultural component. Would something like that be able to be intertwined under this statute?
Chair Joachim.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Keeler. From my understanding, and this has been around for a long time, and it used to be kind of called the school within a school, and if you had an administrative group of folks that were willing to align standards and figure everything out, that you could be given that latitude. But the statute's so confusing, people don't want to try. But I'm going to kick it over to people that have more expertise than I do in this.
Executive Director Esdahl.
Thanks, Chair Jordan. Representative Keeler, the sorts of innovations I understand you to be describing are definitely the sorts of things that would be permissible under state law, and as such that a school could decide to do if they were to pursue site governed status. So I think the examples you gave are really good examples of the sort of things that a school in this framework or using this framework might choose to pursue.
Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Keeler.
We can take it offline. Thanks.
Representative Falconer.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair Joachim, for bringing this, and it's great to see you, Dr. Nolan. We just met with you last week at the school. So I just want just a quick, I love this. I think this is a great bill. Thanks for bringing it forward. Thanks for all the work you do for the students, the schools in my district. And I know families absolutely love it and the options that you provide for the students. And so thanks for being here and thanks for the great bill.
Thank you.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Chair Jordan, and thank you. This is a great bill. I just have a clarifying question. It says in here that within 60 days of receiving the proposal, the school board must determine whether to approve, deny, or return the proposal. Where did the 60 days come from? I'm just curious.
Executive Director Esdahl.
Thanks, Representative Green. The 60 days was actually in statute previously. We just moved where it appeared in statute. So if you see it as stricken out later, so it's not a new addition. And I think the 60 days, to be honest, I'm not sure 20 years ago where that 60 days originally came from.
Representative Green, follow up.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Yeah, no, I was just curious about that because, like, if a proposal comes into the school board to go through the proper procedure, 60 days is actually not enough time to go through a work session, approval, community comment. So it sets a board up to, and I don't know, maybe we've been following this or not, but it'd be worth just noting, and maybe we need to just adjust that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Green. Representative Lawrence.
Madam Chair, thank you very much, and thank you for bringing this forward. My question is for Dr. Nolan. You did not use this bill or this legislation to do what you're doing, correct? You had other avenues that you used.
Yes.
Director Nolan, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Basically, the North Star of our instructional framework and innovation aspect from our superintendent direction really cultivated that initiative. So more or less, like, really reinforcing the interests and passion of students and teachers in your site really kind of created this whole thing with our outdoor learning program. So it was not something that I looked at and said, okay, this is the opportunity. It's more or less our superintendent, our instructional framework, which is really rigorous, really guided those principles into developing innovation and creativity with our students.
Representative Lawrence, follow up.
Yep. Madam Chair, follow up. And my fundamental question for you is, would this, your viewpoint, with this legislation, I'm not opposed to the legislation, so don't take it that way, okay? But in your circumstance, would this legislation be more hindering because of the parameters that it gives to what you've been able to accomplish in your school?
No, Dr. Nolan.
I don't think so, no.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
You're fine. Don't worry.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, don't worry about it. Representative Lawrence, follow up?
No further questions.
Great. Further questions from members? Okay, Chair Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have a couple questions and then comment. And first of all, thank you, Chair Joachim, for bringing this up, and I met with both these gentlemen in my office, and you explained it very well. I think clarifying things for schools and instructors to be able to better utilize it is a good thing. So appreciate it. And to me, anytime we can bring innovation and empowering innovation through local control is a good thing. So a couple questions. I know Hopkins is already doing something similar to this, it sounds like, maybe utilizing some of this structure, but it's my understanding, and I don't know who wants to answer this, that this bill is basically taking the things that are currently in statute, kind of reorganizing and clarifying them. Are there additions being added to this or things taken out, or is this just clarification making it easier to understand?
Chair Joachim.
Thank you. Yeah, very few additions, but some of the ones you saw in the amendment. What it really is trying to do is make this model usable for a district and put a little bit more bookends and requirements around showing evidence-based results. But maybe Mr. Esdahl has some more to add.
Executive Director Esdahl.
Thanks, Chair Bennett. I appreciate your question. The vast majority of the changes are of the nature that Representative Joachim described. And in terms of just that number of lines, most of them are clarifying what actually needs to be in the agreement and the process by which that agreement is actually entered into. I think those were the two main sticking points. There are a couple of other very small additions, for example, saying that the principal needs to be part of the committee, the site governed committee, and clarifying a couple of things with the process by which licensed teachers are selected for the site. But there are no substantial shifts in the actual intentions or authorities in the law.
Chair Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for that. Another question I have, because it's my understanding, too, that there are maybe a little more flexibility for site-governed schools in some of the statutes that public schools follow. And I'm wondering the evidence base and that type of thing and assessments, which I think is incredibly important. Does that include having to still take the statewide assessment, currently the MCAs? Is that included? And then I do have another follow-up.
That's
sorry.
Great. We have time. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Madam Chair. No, that doesn't change anything with the underlying requirements of the test that they have to take.
Chair Bennett.
Thank you. And that's good to hear because I think this is a great way to allow innovation and then measure it and see are we getting better gains here in scores than traditional, and then other schools would want to follow through and perhaps do the same kind of thing. So I think it's a great thing to look at innovation like this to make it more clear, because lots of times our laws are not very clear and create confusion. So if we can create some clarity, that's a good thing. So thank you.
Chair Joachim, any final thoughts?
Thank you. Thank you, members, for your time and attention and for your questions. And I think the bottom line is it was a statute that was a good idea when it was put in place, but was a little too cumbersome for districts to actually take advantage of, and it didn't produce the innovation folks thought. So these fine folks came along and said, we have an idea to fix that. And then we also have school districts that were digging in but would like the backing that, you know, sometimes you have great ideas in a district, somebody spurs it along, and then an administration changes or a teacher leaves, and then it kind of falls by the wayside. This helps put a stronger framework around it so it can continue on. So, members, I would love your support.
Well, thank you. And with that, I will lay over House File 4176 as amended for further consideration at a later date. Thank you. Oh. And thank you, Chair Joachim, for joining us today. And thank you all for your testimony.
Thank you.
You might have some takers on the Potbelly Pig offer. I didn't specify takers from which party, but is Representative Bernegg here? Okay, members, we're going to take a brief recess while we track down Representative Bernegg. So for right now, there's a lot of people passing bills around. So for right now, this committee stands in recess. But don't go too far. Members, I call the House Education Policy Committee back to order. Representative Vernick, thank you for jetting over. We know it's a busy time right before deadline. And so, members, our final bill up for consideration today is House File 2544. And members, it is our intention to hear this bill and re-refer it to the Education Finance Committee. So Representative Vernick, welcome to the committee. I will move House File 2544 before us to re-refer the bill to the Education Finance Committee. I also understand you have an author's amendment to get the bill in the shape you prefer, so I will move the A3 amendment for you. So to your amendment, Representative Vernick.
Yes, thank you very much. The amendment aligns with some of the amendments taken in the Senate, as well as helps outline membership on the committee and adds an additional duty for the committee, the task force, excuse me.
Any discussion to the A3 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. The amendment prevails. To your bill as amended, Representative Vernick.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Before you is House File 2544, a bill brought forth to establish a dual enrollment task force. There are two main components of the bill. It establishes membership of the task force. As outlined in the A3 amendment, starting on line 1.6, you'll see a variety of interested parties listed from agency staff to educators to students and more. Membership has been tweaked based on the language from the Senate and with advocates' input, which includes adding more voices from people with lived experiences. It also outlines duties of the task force to review dual enrollment funding formulas, analyze cost variations among post-secondary institutions, examine the transparency and accountability of funding, identify barriers to participation caused by the funding formula, make recommendations, and identify metrics to evaluate the impact of proposed changes. This bill also authorizes the Department of Education to provide administrative support, and the task force will expire on May 30th, 2027, or upon submission of the report, whichever comes later. Minnesota was the first in the nation to pass dual enrollment laws back in 1986, and it remains an effective tool to reduce college costs, accelerate degree completion, and strengthen workforce readiness. In fact, Mr. Stahl came to my school. He was our counselor, and he told us about this really great program that if you took 0 hour, you could attend College in the Classroom or PSEO, and if you weren't a good test taker, you didn't have to take the ACT or the SAT because you were already enrolled in Noka Ransey Community College, and you could transfer to a Minnesota State College, and he kind of went on all this. And as a first-gen college grad in my family, I thought, sold! So I participated in concurrent enrollment and found it to be the best path for me to higher ed. Participation in dual enrollment has grown significantly, and the funding structures have not evolved. This bill does not change statute, but it does offer a structured, time-limited task force that will bring together funding experts, agencies, schools, and those with lived experience to study and evaluate dual enrollment to improve outcomes. Before making changes to this program, we need clear data and coordinated input. This bill ensures that any future changes are grounded in strong evidence, informed by participant perspectives, and supported by fiscal transparency. I believe I have some testifiers here.
Yes.
Here they are. So I will welcome them. Thank you.
Representative Vernick, these are your testifiers. I have them in a slightly different order, but are you president of People for PSEO Handlin?
Yes, and also Connor Tran, the student, is no longer available today. He won't be here, so.
That's okay. First on my list of testifiers is Beatrice Handlin, president of People for PSEO. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, committee. Thank you all for having me here. My name is Beatrice Handlin. I am a resident of White Bear Lake, and I am the president of People for PSEO, and I'm also a former PSEO student. People for PSEO is dedicated to promoting, defending, and expanding opportunities through the PSEO program. I'm here today in support of House File 2544, which, if adopted, would establish a task force to analyze the dual enrollment funding formulas and make recommendations to ensure equitable, transparent, and adequate funding for all stakeholders. This task force is vital to the continued success and growth of the PSEO program. The program has now existed for 40 years, and participation rates continue to grow according to MDE data. And it saves students time, money on post-secondary education, and it also continues to close achievement gaps, and you can see this in the packet that was provided. This program also gives students opportunities that they may not have had before. Students want to and will continue to use this program because of the opportunities it provides. However, there are still gaps. Students struggle with access to information. You can see the report in the packet on information gaps, transportation, access to meals on campus, and there has been continuous discourse on the funding formula, especially in the ways that it leaves some of our schools struggling. This bill and task force will begin with the work and to address the gaps in the funding formula and provide solutions that serve all stakeholders without hurting students, and providing solutions to school districts and our higher ed institutions. I want to thank Representative Vernig for her work on this and the members of the committee for your time today.
Thank you, President Hanlon. Next up, I see we have Kawik Rogers, the Executive Director at Catalyst for Systems Change. Welcome back to the committee. Director Rogers, please restate your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Absolutely. Thank you, Chair and committee members. My name is Kalik Rogers. I'm a former PSEO student and, as you mentioned, Executive Director of Catalyst for Systems Change. And I just want to clearly state that I am in support of a dual credit task force. You know, over the last few months, and actually since I was in high school, you know, I've been an advocate for the program. And as of recent, you know, we've traveled throughout the state, across committees, political parties, and just through communities. And there's one consistent theme here, is that we're operating in silos. When it comes to institutions, schools, policymakers, communities, they all have different perspectives and different uses of PSEO and dual credit programs. But we are not always in the same room, listening and sharing our experiences together. And, you know, in all honesty, when that happens, you know, it doesn't create solution, that creates confusion. And, you know, I had a question. How many of you played the game Telephone? Okay. So y'all kind of know where this is going, right? In that regard, by the time I start with one person and we get to the other side of the room, there'll be a totally different message shared. And that's what we're experiencing. You know, you know, this happened with me from a personal standpoint because when I was a young person utilizing, wanting to take PSEO when I was in high school, I wasn't actually encouraged to take the opportunity. In fact, I was discouraged. You know, I was stated that, like, isn't this packet of homework good enough? Isn't that hard enough work for you? And, of course, it wasn't. That's why I was there to take a challenge. But, you know, outside of their point of view of me and their level of expectation, I decided to exceed that and state that those fears are yours, not mine. You know, so I took advantage of the opportunity being the first African-American male at my high school to take PSEO. This is Gordon Parks High School in St. Paul. And, you know, to my surprise, I passed all my classes with A's, by the way. It was a better GPA than I actually had while I was in high school. I'm taking my standard courses. And it didn't just help me have a broader vision of possibilities. It also increased those possibilities for my peers as well. As they see me being successful, taking a positive risk, that then encouraged them the following year to take PSEO and dual credit. And actually, the vast majority of those students decided to take CIS because that was a better option for them because they were informed on which options were available. And so lastly, I just want to state, you know, I just want to create a space where we could be transparent about the issues that all stakeholders are having and experiencing and create some measurable outcomes that we can actually implement to change the outcome for our students here in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. Next on my list to testify is Mark Grant. Uh, Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Director Grant, please state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair. Chair Jordan, Chair Bennett, committee members for the record. My name is Mark Grant. I'm a communication studies instructor at Dakota County Technical College, and I currently help direct the governmental relations work on behalf of Minnesota State College faculty. MSCF represents nearly 4,000 instructors, counselors, and librarians at our 26 colleges on 47 campuses across the state. And I want to thank you for the opportunity for us to quickly share our thoughts on House File 2544. We want to thank Representative Vernick for bringing this bill forward. I've been teaching for 28 years, and we've been talking about dual enrollment almost my entire career. Those conversations have historically revolved around dual enrollment's mission, access, delivery, rigor, accountability, and credentials. And MSCF continues to be willing to have and even eager to have all those conversations. But with the growing scale of dual enrollment, we see the strain on the PSEO infrastructure and believe that none of those conversations bear much fruit until you address the mechanism by which the dual enrollment is funded. MSCF does believe that there's an approach out there that centers on the student but does not financially disadvantage our districts or our campuses. We really appreciate the amendment introduced and the inclusion of a higher ed faculty voice in this dual enrollment task force. However, the current amendment creates a single spot in the task force for a faculty member from Minnesota State System. The Minnesota State System includes the 26 colleges and the 7 universities, and those two institution types are represented by different faculty unions, the Minnesota State College faculty and the Interfaculty Organization. Despite being a single system, for a variety of reasons, dual enrollment plays out differently on our college campuses than it does at the universities. And because of that, we would like to see a seat reserved for each of the higher ed faculty organizations. We think the work product will be more comprehensive if both perspectives are included. I'm not here to speak for IFO, but I do believe they submitted a letter expressing a similar sentiment. So MSCF is in full support of this task force. We just want to be invited to the conversation. So thank you, and I'll answer any questions if you have them.
Thank you for your testimony. Hearing that our student is not here today, that concludes public testimony, and we will move to member discussion. First on my list is Representative Keeler.
Why am I first today? Okay. I have a couple questions, just mathing. Is this 23 spots then? That's a lot. And so what I've learned, is that what you counted?
I didn't count that point.
Well, you're welcome. We're mathing over here
for
all of us. I just wanted to make
committee.
Sure we were all on the same page.
Representative Keeler.
Thank you. Sorry. Yes. Thank you, Chair. So in my time, I've done a couple task forces. Representative Bakeberg and I also did a legislative task force, and I just want to give us a little bit of caution. Because as we heard from this testifier, like, he wants more seats at the table, right? So then that adds 3 more. And when I look through it, I think it's like, we have one member of a school board, we have one member of a charter, we have one superintendent. All of these groups are going to come and ask for more seats at the table. Like, I almost guarantee it. Also, I am concerned about the way that the language is written in 2.6 to 2.8. Typically, when we identify in task forces and other groups, the difference between Greater Minnesota and the metro is we don't name it Minneapolis-St. Paul. We say, like, the 7 county, like, metro, and then outside of the 7 county. But again, the math in this only says out of the 23 people you have on this task force, only 3 of them are actually students. Now, mind you, they have to be successful students in PSEO. I think that doesn't create the opportunity for the students who weren't successful, because we know that that's real. And only 2 of those spots are from Greater Minnesota. And like a broken record, I just keep having to say that that's an unfair geographic disadvantage to us. And I think obviously if we're going to do something that impacts students' lives so much, there should be more students on this task force. Now, I'm carrying bills with PSEO. Representative Knutson and I have decided that we want to rip the Band-Aid off to this and have this conversation. We're doing it in Education Finance next week, and I encourage everybody to come with their wonderful solutions, not just complaints. The thing is that I think our best option around this, and I'm just going to throw it out there, is the OLA report. The OLA is an outside entity that would look at this system from a non-biased lens. When we put all of these people in a room, the thing they're going to fight for, and what I've learned in the task forces I've been a part of, is they just hunker down on their own part of it. It's not really this beautiful way to come up with solutions. You know, our higher ed are going to hunker down on it. Our principals are going to hunker down on it. Like, we're not going to get anywhere. And what Representative Bakeberg and I, and Lawrence, maybe you have a different experience, when we did the legislative task force,
It was setting up legislators to sort of be the champions around it, and then there was no limit who could or couldn't engage in the conversations. Remember, we had like a day was about kids, and then we would have as many students as we could. It wasn't so prescriptive. And I get nervous about doing these sort of things. This is going to grow to be probably 40 to 50 people, and how effective then is that? And so I understand we need to talk about PSEO. There are many, 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 many issues that any lane we talk to has regarding it. Rigor, cost, the impacts on K-12, like just it goes on and on. And so I can add more notes about this. I just think we need to maybe think a little bit differently about how we go about this, because in my professional opinion, I just haven't seen task forces be extremely effective, and they do cost us money in a way that, because we have to compensate everybody's time, especially if we're going to have youth at the table. So those are my just input and suggestions. Thank you.
Representative Vernig. Okay. Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Keeler, ditto. Yes, all of those things. I think that's really important. My question was, we had also lost count, like Representative Roach, of how many people were going to be on this task force. I did notice from the amendment versus from the original bill that you took off the legislators that were serving on here. And I just wanted to know, Madam Chair, why you had chosen to take off the legislators.
Representative Vernig.
Yes, because the task force has 23 people already. So it was taken off in the Senate. We adopted that same amendment here. I don't disagree. I was kind of like, well, yes or no. I do believe that there is more work that needs to happen on who should be a member of the committee. Also, 23 is a lot, and as we've heard, more people want to participate. So between, I think, here and as it moves forward, I am open to what that could look like, whether it's a smaller group with more open meetings. I also was on the student truancy attendance and truancy legislative study group. We could do membership that way as well, more aligned. That's why. So,
Representative Mueller.
Thank you.
Excuse me, Vice Chair Mueller.
Well, thank you, Chair Jordan. I would really like to hear the Senate's reasoning for taking the legislators off something when we're supposed to be then getting recommendations and writing the bills and all those things. But then again, the other body is the other body. So I think that I would tend to agree more with Representative Keeler, and looking at how we do legislative task force or working groups where you can bring as many people as you need to have to make an informed decision. And then you have the legislators there from many different places and spaces and from both sides of the aisle that we're able to then work together. This is a passion project for many of us. I mean, Representative Knutson, I've worked in schools where I've, you know, cautioned people about PSEO and some of the, I mean, I have lots of things to say about PSEO. And so, yeah, I know, Madam Chair, I believe the motion is to send it to EdFi.
That is correct.
And I would agree that we should do that. I just think that there needs to be some extra discussion about the structure of the task force. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Vernig, any thoughts on the Senate? I'm kidding.
Senate's going to Senate, right? I think that's the...
Representative Fogelman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't really have a question. I had two kids that did PSEO, two very different learning kids that I knew one kid could do it, one didn't. And I've been hearing a lot from my districts, too, about some of the frustrations. So I think it's good that we're looking at it. I agree with Representative Keeler on all the stuff that she said that... And she's working with Representative Knutson, and I just think there's a lot more things that need to be looked at before this is obviously ready for prime time, but I'm glad that we're having this discussion.
Before I turn it over to Chair Bennett, I just want to say that, you know, PSEO is one of those issues that we have been hearing a lot of, and I'm really thinking about something that Representative Keeler said, where she said, come with your ideas, not just no's. We all think PSEO is important. We all think education is important. We know that there are some problems that really need to be solved here. This is one of the rare issues that I think everyone agrees that there's a problem, and I'm appreciative of the testifiers who came here with ideas today. I am hopeful that I don't sit on education finance, and I told everyone to stop talking about it, but I'm going to just say that I hope education finance has a really good discussion next week. I don't sit on that committee, but I'll definitely be watching, and I'm glad and grateful that we have representatives like Representative Keeler, Representative Vernick, and Representative Knudsen who are working on this issue. And I wish you all good luck. But please keep working on it, and please, to the public, please keep coming with your ideas. We need them. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Vernick, thank you for just bringing the PSEO issue forward, and to Representative Keeler as well, Representative Knudsen, I know you're all working on it. It's really important. It hasn't been updated for way too many years. Mm-hmm. A lot of things have happened in between, including going from zero online learning to now a lot of it. And so definitely something we need to look at. And so thank you for that. That said, I do have a few comments. First of all, totally support moving it on to Ed Finance. All discussions should be on the table. And I will share my experiences with being on a task force. I've been on a couple of them throughout my 12 years here. And I would say they've both been like hair pulling out experiences. Matter of fact, I'm surprised I do not look like Mr. Withers right now. That's about, I'm sorry, Jody. I think you have a very good hairdo. I like that. Okay, I better be quiet about that. Anyways, I just, it is definitely an experience that you would just have to try before you say you basically do a lot of work and get nothing done. So that said, I support the OLA report because I think we'll get a lot more out of that, a lot of looking at what's working, what's not working, the historical part of it, all those things would give us really good information and data on how to move forward. And Representative Keeler, I appreciate your comments. I just love how you're always real and matter of fact. So thank you for that. It's good. It is good. We need that. We need more of that. So I do support moving this forward. I think we should have everything on the table, have open minds as we listen in Ed Finance, because I know more discussion will take place, and I'm looking forward to that. So thank you.
Representative Vernick, any closing thoughts?
No, this task force is really about finding out how the funding works, and there's clearly, I mean, I think we knew that, more work to do between now and Ed Finance, so I would just ask for you to support the motion to move it over there.
Okay, and I will renew that motion to re-refer House File 2544 as amended to the Education Finance Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and House File 2544, as amended, is on its way. Thank you, Representative Vernick. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.